Welcome to the LVC podcast series. No two refractive clinics have the same approach or level of expertise when it comes to modern marketing. Through the LVC podcast series, you'll be introduced to industry experts of various marketing disciplines. Join us on this journey as we discuss all things marketing, and specifically how they relate to the world of laser vision correction. The LVC podcast series. Know where you want to take your laser vision clinic and get there.
Well, hello everyone. This is Matt Boudreau, the Senior Practice Development Manager for the Western United States at Zeiss and with the Zeiss Smile Procedure. Here today with two of my favorites, from Proven Healthcare Consultants, for the next edition of our LVC podcast series, Reducing Cancellations and Addressing Profitability and Loss Prevention. So with that said, let me introduce once again, Christine Scarlett and Lauren Weaver from Proven Healthcare Consultants. Ladies, thank you so much for joining me once again for this important topic. Would you like to say a few words to kick things off, and then I'll do a little introduction?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's always a pleasure. We always look forward to our time with you and everyone there at Zeiss. We're huge fans and we love the podcast. We've listened to it. So to be on it with you is so much fun. We're thrilled to be here.
Yes. And covering a topic that I think is just so pertinent to bring up as we are looking into 2023. What are we looking to improve this year? And so this is probably a big one, a hot topic for a lot of the practices out there.
Couldn't agree with you more. We're facing some interesting headwinds with changes to the socioeconomic landscape. There's been some recent fear generation with some certain articles. And so, you know, we definitely want to bring forward the importance of staying up and current with canceled patients or even going after patients who have not converted in the past. Mm-hmm. So Christine, I'll start with you as a friendly reminder to our audience. You know, you bring a breadth of experience, 10 years actually, in the customer service space with sales and marketing. Also, this comes from a private practice that you worked at for 8 years. You were able to apply all the strategies learned in the elective space and apply it towards patient experience, which actually exploded your refractive cash-based systems and programs to include an average 60% growth rate per year as the chief marketing officer. So it is great to have your knowledge and your experience on this topic. And Lauren Weaver, you actually are the embodiment of the next generation marketing guru. You're fully immersed in the virtual world of patient engagement. I've seen this firsthand. You're really, gifted with private practice work and ambassadorship. And this comes from even your own experience as Miss Arkansas. When you were recruited actually as a patient to join the practice, helping to grow their social media targeting in the refractive space and for their patients. Your strategies also help to explode their social media growth to over 14,000 followers in just 2 years. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I know about you is you really know how to reach people and connect with them through all the various platforms that they use today. This includes all of content, imagery, and you help move them into action while supporting practices to do the same. So also amazing to have you on this podcast to have you both provide your pearls of wisdom. So with that said, why don't we jump into the first question that I have for you both? I want to talk about the refractive surgery cancellations as a start. You know, so many times I think practices either write these off and claim them to be an unfortunate happenstance and don't really go after these patients mm-hmm. after the fact. And it can happen at every level, right? Not just the consultation, but even before the procedure itself. So what I'd like to know from the two of you is, what have you done about this? What have you both done to tackle this in your own past experience within the practice? And why was it such a priority for you?
I think that for me, when I was in practice, everything I did had to be tied to achieving our goals in the refractive space. I was really lucky to be in a practice model where that was my primary responsibility as the director of refractive. And so I personally always worked backwards. If I knew our per eye goal for the month and the quarter, then I knew how to identify opportunities within that patient journey by working backwards from how many eyes we had, how many cancellations, what our conversion rate was, what our no-show rate was, what our lead to consult conversion rate. So really just working backwards then to be able to budget and plan for marketing. And so in that process of working backwards, Lauren and I really believe there are 7 points of conversion for the premium patient. And so working through each conversion point, and one of those points is really converting from scheduling their procedure to completion. Just because they scheduled does not mean that they completed their procedure, whether it's LASIK or SMILE or premium IOL upgrades. When we look at that premium refractive patient, there is some drop-off sometimes between scheduling and surgery. And for us, when I was able to identify that as at the time, a fairly high percentage or higher than I certainly wanted, I knew it was something we had to address. And it just, if you look at the numbers, say you make $5 million a year in refractive surgery and you reduce your cancellations by 5%, that's an extra $250,000 in revenue you've retained in your practice, right? And so for me, once I really made that a focus, you know, over the last 4 years, I was able to reduce my own premium refractive surgery cancellation rate by 19%. And that's a lot of revenue when you factor that in, that we were able to add to our bottom line just by retaining it. Those patients were already in the door. We were just losing them through the cracks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think even in my own past experience in working in refractive clinics, you know, I say this with a lot of love, patients get really squirmy. They get really wiggly. They go home with kind of this emboldened sense of moving forward. And then something is said, or they research something, and they can kind of fall out, you know, in between a really well accomplished, polished consultation delivered by the practice. And so we have to stay on top of making sure that these people stick on the schedule. So I love that. Yeah. Lauren, how about for you? Any thoughts there?
Yeah. So on the topic that you were talking about, that patients go home and questions might be asked, it's so important to educate them and equip them with the answers to the questions they might not even know they had. But oftentimes in healthcare, we forget about this invisible third party, which is traditionally a spouse or a patient. And, you know, if we're talking about refractive. And so just making sure that as a practice that we're sending them home with the correct materials, but also identifying those questions before they even come up.
Mm-hmm. Agree. Yeah. The partnership can work to your advantage or it can work against you. But, you know, I always try to just be inclusionary, whether that additional person is in person or extending myself, you know, by way of a virtual call or a personal call, or even inviting them in for a consultation so that we keep them included in the care. Love that. Great point. Okay. My second question is, I know you both mentioned before that refractive surgery cancellations happen to be an issue for you in your past experience in the practice. Can you tell me a little bit about that and what were some of the specific challenges faced?
Yes. So Christine and I worked in private practice together for 4 years, and both of us were measured on the growth and the big goals we had that Christine mentioned earlier. And we were always measured off of the bottom line of our refractive revenue.
Yes. And so I think for a marketing-driven practice like ours and like many of the practices we work with, when you are marketing to that top funnel audience that we call, they're maybe not the person who's Googling LASIK. Yes, you're marketing to them too, but if you're casting a wider marketing net and you're reaching out to patients that are more top of the funnel, it's really, really successful. But I think the thing you can't forget is with that audience, we're accelerating the consideration journey for them. They may not be the patient that has actively considered refractive surgery for years, or it's been top of mind. A lot of times this top funnel audience that we're now getting in as leads and getting in for consultations, their journey is a little different, and they're more likely to drop out because of this quick journey they've had, but they don't have to. When we sit down and really, again, break down each of those 7 points of conversion and make sure we are just doing a different and more thorough job of educating them on why this is important and why this is something they value. And so it has to be a little different than that low-hanging fruit. The patient whose friend sent them, they've thought of it for years, they Googled LASIK. That's a different audience journey than some of those top-level patients that you're reaching with kind of non-traditional marketing tactics.
And cancellation cost, I mean, it's more than just a loss in revenue. It's a loss in marketing dollars, our staff's time, especially these counselors, that their time is so precious. If they lose that phone call or that patient on a consult, I mean, that's a lot of time we're talking about. Clinic time, overall, just our resources. So thinking about the investment you've made overall in this person at that point, and if marketing costs, you know, is about $400 per LASIK patient, and times that by 10 months, that is $50,000 a year. And just marketing, out of all the things I listed above that are just being thrown to the wind.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we teach this a lot, you know, in our work through the trainings and presentations that we offer, you know, the value of how much it costs to market today's patient. And we say it's anywhere from $250 on a lower end up to $500. So we're definitely in that kind of same range of thought. And I like that you brought up the point that it's not just the loss of the marketing dollars or the bilateral procedure, but that it's loss of production time, right? And everybody's time is valuable, from the director first impressions all the way up to the surgeon and everyone in between. You know, those working hours, those people hours add up as well. And so going after these patients, keeping them, you know, kind of in mind with what they want to accomplish is so important. Do you find that there's definitely a difference in your opinion of the qualification of patients based on where they heard about you from? I mean, obviously with like a patient who has heard about you from another patient or has gone to Google with kind of active intention, I tend to see them as a little bit more qualified. What do you think about that? If it's Facebook or Instagram or TikTok, you know, these other mediums.
Absolutely. I think a lot of it comes down to really knowing your marketing journey and your audience. And we believe there are different categories of audience, right? And so, yes, like you're saying, there's patients who hear about you from their friend or through patient advocates, where if you have a really amazing patient journey and your advocates are very passionate, they've had a different encounter with your brand because someone they trust is passionate about you. Versus if you maybe deliver good outcomes and have a nice professional experience, someone still may have heard about you from their friend, but it's not as passionate of an advocacy. That's more like, oh, I had it done here, it was good, right? That still is a different journey, even though it's referred by a patient. So a lot of it has to do with the experience you create and how well you can trust that passionate advocacy of your patients, which does wonders, right? That helps us so much when these new patients coming in have that kind of an exposure to your brand. But like you said, the patients who are Googling, they have obviously very high intent. And then for us, we really believe in social media marketing. And again, it depends on the quality of your marketing. It's not all created equal. So if you're running more generic ads that are really just focused on the procedure, you're going to get a certain temperature of lead. If you're really able to invest in user-generated content type advertising that has a different messaging to those leads as they're coming in, they may be a little bit hotter of a lead because they've had a different experience with your brand already before they even inquired. So a lot of it really comes down into, what is your brand? What are your differentiators? How are you positioning yourself from that first point of conversion, which is just the awareness and impression of you as a brand?
That is such a great point. I think that practices need to be reminded of that. I troll shamelessly a lot of customer accounts. And when I see a ton of stock image posting, I can tell in that moment what it's going to attract. And so the more organic kind of, you know, micro macro influencer, patient testimonials, you know, it's great to have the birthday cake celebration of the staff and highlighting team members, employee of the month. I think there has to be a full kind of spectrum of what's represented through social media marketing so that the patient feels endeared to you and becomes a hotter lead. So I'm really glad you brought that up.
And one thing I want to touch on, which I could go obviously on and on about social media and just online marketing in general for our practices, but just remembering, you know, if you could take this little tip, you want to interrupt the user experience on social media, meaning you want them to stop scrolling. There's so much we scroll past in a day that we don't even realize or register that it was on our screen. But when I say you want to impact it, there's a difference between negative and where you say, hey, this doesn't belong here, and now I'm going to click out of the app because I didn't like that ad. It looked like an ad. I know a smile. I'm going to see clearly. You don't have to tell me. Versus positively impacting that user to the point that they're watching a quote unquote ad, but they don't realize it because it evokes emotion. And what Christine was talking about, these patient videos and from their mouth, the words of their experience and how it changed their life. That's kind of the difference we're talking about here.
That is a great tip. I love that. So my next question, I've heard you say that you found great success in reducing cancellations. How were you able to achieve this in the practice?
Yes. So we really believe success is an equation. There's always a formula for success. So kind of just working backwards again and going back through our formula. So, you know, once I'd identified that cancellations was something that I saw potential to reduce, it was a big perspective shift. And so really going back through and considering each point of patient conversion. So going from every point from their encounter with our brand to their interest, to their inquiry, to the conversation, to the consultation, to the scheduling, to then for completion, breaking that down. And as we always say, putting ourselves in the shoes of the consumer, which is our patient, and really stopping and walking through that process as if we were a patient, considering each point. And if each moment, each interaction was not building confidence, security, and trust, it's doing the opposite. It's not neutral. No interaction with a patient is neutral. So really being hypercritical of each thing and making sure that through every point in that process, we were fanning their flame of excitement and interest, not letting it die down. I think that we're not guaranteed that from the moment they inquire, there's a lot that can happen between they actually leave that surgery room or that procedure room. And we forget that everyone's vying for this consumer dollar. So even if they want this, I think sometimes it's easy to think, oh, well, they want this procedure. That's why they inquired. But there is so much vying for that dollar and that time and that effort every single day. They're being marketed to in different ways, whether it's vacations or cars or, you know, these high dollar items that so many times, if you really analyze your cancellations and you can figure out the why, a lot of times it's just that they kind of something else came to the surface that was a little bit higher value at that time for them, and they had to make a choice, right? And so that's what we can't let happen. It's we are given this amazing opportunity in that journey to really help empower them to do something that we know in refractive surgery will benefit them every single day of their life. And so we can do that with so much confidence.
And patients just need to feel ultimately 100% about the choice they're making, or they'll get cold feet and back out when they're finally out of your practice.
So true. I mean, even in my own experience, I would try to walk through the patient's shoes, even if it was just sitting in the waiting room, right?
Yes.
Taking in what they are seeing. But now we live in this whole digital world and it creates a whole new landscape, and we're competing with the retail sale side of it, which I personally succumb to a little bit more than I should. But we are not in the business of offering a low-cost procedure with many of our practices. It's a premium offering. How do we really stand out, you know, and kind of grab, like you said, the attention of the patient for all these other competitive services that they're seeing on their little handheld smartphones? So that's a great point. I really like that. Next question. What are some things that you recommend to help the patient feel like they're all in, like there's nothing else to do outside of choose your practice?
Yes, that 100% feeling that I was just talking about earlier is, again, we can say this a million times, but it's because it's so important, is to go back through every patient touch point, just like you were talking about, Matt, in their journey as if you were the patient. So take this marketing admin surgeon hat off, which our surgeons probably won't be going through every touch point, but remembering the patient and who you are as a consumer, who you are as a patient as well, and making sure that we are adding trust and building this trust at every touch point and providing educational content throughout the entire process. Yeah. So investing in conversion training is also just another route to go into it for anyone who works with an LVC patient. This patient-facing team really understanding the art of educating our patients and what a privilege, and it's our duty to do so, to educate our patients on all of the options out there. And how do we do that where they understand the value and make a decision that they're 100% comfortable with?
Yes. I mean, we were just working in a practice last week where we were doing this and really teaching them how to lead the conversation with the patient. I think there's an art to that, and it's easy to feel like, oh, we're not selling anything, we don't want to focus on sales, which absolutely you don't. But there is an art of confidently leading the patient through this journey and through this investigation that really is so important. And so many times we see team members in counseling roles who really don't know how to counsel patients. And maybe they were an excellent technician or an excellent front desk representative, or may have wonderful people skills and love their patients. But that doesn't mean that they have been trained in that art of conversion counseling, which is so important. And part of that is making sure when the patient walks out, there are no stones unturned. There are no hesitations and concerns, because we know how to have this conversation and lead it. And that's, I think, what we see most commonly is just that lack of ability and training in knowing how to uncover what this patient needs to feel and hear during this process.
Yeah. And so with that, you know, we always like an actual give or takeaway from this is, again, going through that patient journey, but sitting in on consults, reviewing the educational information that you're giving out, because so often it becomes stale and we give the same thing for years and years. But think about it. If you didn't have the background in ophthalmology that you do have, what questions would you have still? What things were not identified? So really, again, putting yourself in the consumer's shoes.
Yes, because that's when they go home and there's the questions they forgot to ask, or they didn't know to ask, or their spouse asked that they can't articulate. And then that's when you see those doubts creep back in.
The wheels start spinning. And I always say that, you know, as someone who's had LASIK myself for quite a long time, and my generation, what was important to us all those years ago is completely different from what a millennial or a Gen Z would like represented in their own decision-making process. And, you know, they want to really feel included in their care, not just kind of spoken at or spoken to. They want to feel like all of the research that they've done behind the scenes and everything that they've learned on their own gets validated. But also that you're kind of tapping into the whole avatar state of what they represent and how you're solving their problem. And and so it's a very interesting thing. And I'm glad you both spoke to that, because I think that's a great pro tip from the three of us to the practices on this podcast.
We've seen you in action, Matt. A master at work.
Thank you. I feel very blessed to have this skill, because, you know, and it doesn't hurt to do 15,000 plus consults in your career. I think you get a little well-oiled when you do that many. But just for me, I've always tried to mirror myself to the person, regardless of their generation or who they are or what they want to accomplish. Mirroring myself to them has always just been a slam dunk to kind of connect and have a high conversion rate. So great pro tips from the pros. Well, last but not least, I have one more final question. Could you please share what your top takeaways are for action items for that busy practice so that they can see quick wins as a result of listening in on this podcast?
Mm-hmm. We love practical takeaways and action items. And I really think for this topic, there's kind of three things that we would leave any practice with that will really have the most impact on reducing cancellations. So the first two, I would say, is investing in your counseling doctor and your counseling professional. So whether that's a patient counselor or whoever your closer is, investing in these two team members to really make sure they're trained, like we were saying, in the art of conversions. Because if the patient leaves this consultation with any hesitations, fears, concerns, lack of certainty, that's where you see the cancellation happen. If they leave 100% as much as you possibly can, that is a huge game changer. And so making sure they're trained in body language, in how to connect with patients, like you said, mirroring their patient, picking up on those verbal and nonverbal cues, understanding what motivates the patient and what they place a value on, because we all know that feeling of buyer's remorse, right? Where you leave and, oh gosh. So again, it's never neutral. That consultations are never neutral. They're never going to leave and just be neutral. They're either going to be excited and feel like this is the right decision, or they're going to leave and have that pit in their stomach and go, gosh, you know, I just don't feel 100%. I don't know if this is right for me. I don't know if I'm going to regret spending the money on this. They're going to go have conversations with other people now and ask their friends now, even after the fact, about what they thought and what their experience was. So we have to make sure that they leave with no questions. And my favorite tip is to stop asking patients if you have any other questions. I hate that question. It's too broad. It's too open-ended. Even if you just replace it with, what hesitations or concerns do you still have? It's pointed. It makes them think for a moment. It uncovers a million things. I love that question. It really helps you get a temperature on your patient rather than just assuming that they're good to go because they don't have any questions. But in reality, they probably just blanked.
And also reviewing your take-home material, if you even have any. We've seen practices that have very minimal, but making sure everything you go over and more is in this material, that it really answers all of the questions that a spouse or a partner, again, this invisible third party, may have. So remembering the other person that is part of this conversation that may not be present or even brought up during the conversation. So they feel confident in knowing what to do when, how to regurgitate what was said to them. And again, reiterating that value that it's going to bring in their life.
Yes. And we help practices create these packets all the time, but it really is simply, you know, the FAQ kind of a sheet, a what to expect and a how to prepare. Those are kind of the three categories that patients need to go and feel really confident referencing, that they know what to expect and they know what they're supposed to do when, and all those FAQs they can reference back to, even if it's just simply those three sheets of paper, right? It doesn't have to be complicated or created by a marketing team, right? It's the information that patients need to feel confident.
It needs to be patient focused, right? And I love the whole open-ended question aspect of kind of closing it up with them. You know, we see practices that do it different ways. They could have a very overproduced folder of information. Others I've seen get very specific, like you said. And so it's more meaningful and impactful. And you almost feel like the patient's actually going to take the time to read it and absorb the information. So there's different ways of going about it, but I think you do need something. And, you know, anytime we ask an open-ended question, even if it's trying to uncover motivation towards getting the commitment, but also that final question of how are you feeling at this point? Are there any stones left unturned? Is there anything in the back of your mind that we haven't discussed or brought to bear yet? So that you can move forward making a totally confident decision. These are all things that can be said. And just like you can get them talking about their favorite hobby that they want to be able to do, we can get them talking about the fear too. So once they walk out that door, we want everything solved, everything with a nice, pretty Lexus red bow on it, right? they're confident, they're ready to move forward with their procedure. Those were the questions that I had for today. And I want to again thank the team at Proven Healthcare Consultants, Christine and Lauren, for your valuable time and insights in this podcast. Definitely be looking for more podcasts coming to you in the future. And thank you so much for all of your time today.
Thank you for having us.
We'll see you again soon.
Yes, looking forward to it. And this concludes the latest edition of our LVC podcast series.